Hello, hello, Vancouver. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting at the UBC Point Grey campus on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish lands of the Musqueam people. This is Babe Waves, the sequel to Lady Radio, brought to you by CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. Today at the studio, we have Anna, and I am Hayone. On today's episode, we are going to discuss love, anti-love, Valentine's Day, basically what we think about it. We also have some great tunes, and Anna recorded an interview with Angela Fama. She's an artist and a photographer from Vancouver. Please, Anna, tell us a little bit more about her.
So, hey, everybody. Right. I was so happy that I got to meet Angela Fama over Skype and interviewed her. So Angela is a photographer and an artist. She's from Vancouver. And lately, her recent project, which she launched on midnight, February 13th online, was What is Love? And that project she did in Canada and in USA. You will hear more about it in our interview. And so Angela is an artist whose work explores themes of meaning, emotion, memory, and change. And she's a beautiful person from the outside and the inside. And so I hope you guys will enjoy this interview. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of her works. And yes, check out her website. It's Angela Fama. The idea is to challenge the cliches and the norms of the Valentine's Day that, you know, are so proliferated in the Western culture. And so I was just thinking, was this the initial objective of the project, or was it something that just turned out as a result?
It turned out as a result. Actually, I have a woman that's been really great helping me with my sort of releasing it and getting it out there. And she just wrote me recently and was like, hey, have you thought about when you want to release the pictures? Mm-hmm. You know, you've already had the show. Valentine's Day would be great. And my first impulse was no. Because part of the project is actually to counter that. And that was just my own natural, like once I'd come up with the idea, I realized what is it that makes me want to question this? And part of it is like watching Hollywood movies or being a kid and being in class and getting Valentine's Day cards, like just the whole Western concept of love. So I didn't want to have the project placed anywhere near it because I felt like the Western concept of love was almost so formulaic and so solid that if my little project, even though it's really large for an art project, would just get engulfed by it. But now that I've been working on it for almost 3 years now, I kind of feel like any opportunity to have more people see it and share it, the better. So if there's a way to kind of directly relate to that, like it's not as like a, oh, screw you, Valentine's Day. I used to be more angry about it, but I realized that of course, is part of love as well. So I can't be exclusive about what everyone's concepts of love are. So I'm enjoying my own challenges of sharing it on Valentine's Day.
And so when you were doing this project, did you expect like people to give such diverse definitions of the word love? Or did you think like, you know, like they will sort of align themselves with this broad universal answer to how could you describe love?
I knew in hearts that everyone, like we, answer that question properly. I've done a couple comparative projects in the past, and when I've started them with questions like, how are you actually doing? I've expected a different response from everyone, but in the past, I've found a very similar response. So when I started in this project, I had my own answer, and I was kind of hoping to learn or see, hey, did I get this right? Is everyone else thinking this too? But I know that my answer was very different from what I saw in definitions and Hollywood and Valentine's Day. So I was kind of curious, are there others out there that have a different response to it? And if there are, can we all start sharing that voice, and listening to each other rather than just hearing the systematic definitions?
Yeah. And so I looked at your project and I really enjoyed it. And I was so drawn in and anticipating like every moment of it. And so like here, like I'll just summarize it a bit to our audience because my question will be linked to it. So I looked at that short piece on your website that's like 8 minutes long. And so there you ask strangers to define the word love. What this word means to them personally, and as they think about the answer, you're taking photos of them, of their changing facial expressions as they think, and precisely here, like at this moment, photography was so powerful because it told us everything about the characters just in a few clicks of camera shutters. And so my question is, how did you come up with this brilliant way of doing your project?
It actually happened organically. I went out on the road, and from my last project, the one I mentioned, How Are You?, when I was photographing the answers, I felt like I had been kind of, like I'd received something from people that I also wanted to share because I hadn't been audio recording it ever in the past. So then this time when I went on the road, I went with a friend that was helping me, and I felt like I would be greedy if I was the only person that heard the answers. So I started recording them with his help. Initially just so I could share it with him, and I wasn't sure if it would be shared with the rest of the world as well. I wasn't sure how it was going to be incorporated. I thought maybe I'd just make prints and play the audio at the shows in the background, unlinked to people. But then by the time the project finished, it just suddenly came to me how I ended up showing it in the video format. It really happened organically for me. I had to learn a lot on how to do it, but I really liked the still motion changing with the audio recording, because there was something about being in that room with almost the tension, but also the comfort of being asked really directly, and the way people responded with me within that space. I had to share that as true to form as I could get. So it really happened organically.
Yeah,
I went out knowing I'm going to compile all this information, but I'm not quite sure yet how I'm going to present it when it's done.
Well, I must say the audio that accompanied the photos, that was amazing. It was such a great experience. I was so drawn in. Like, I was like, okay, what's next? What's next? Because, like, I'm listening and then, like, I'm seeing these photos. And, like, it's just, I've never seen a project like this before. It's just this very new way of like, meeting people, new way of introduction, new way of learning things, like photos and the audio that's, you know, accompanying it. It's great. I really enjoyed it. And so on your website, it says that you drove 17,000 kilometers across Canada and USA doing this project. And is that correct, right? Is that the precise distance? And so I will just read out the towns you stopped by for our audience so that they could get the picture of how, you know, how great this project was. So you went to Vancouver, Edmonton, Claire's home, Regina, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Montreal. That's in Canada. And then in USA, you did Michigan, Tennessee, Georgia, Louisiana, New Mexico, and Oregon. And so how were you finding your characters?
I would set up, I did some predetermined locations. So before I left, I called certain places to make sure that it would be all right for me to stop there. And I made a choice because I was really interested in showing past perceived differences. So I wanted to include as many different kind of walks of life as I could. So I chose destinations that were very different. So it wasn't just like an art gallery. It wasn't just a city festival. I went to a gay pride festival. I went to a flea market in Georgia. I went to a contemporary art gallery also in Georgia. I went to a church that had like a bone marrow transplant donation drive day going on. And when I set up, I made a conscious choice to not sort of heavily advertise or try and draw people in. I just had a really like inconspicuous table outside where my friend was, my helper was kind of chatting, or I would be chatting if I wasn't shooting, with anybody that was walking by that was kind of curious. So the people that sat with me hadn't been kind of hoodwinked into it. I wasn't like, come and do this crazy project with me. It was more people that just happened to be walking by that just happened to be interested.
But did they know that you're there with the table and your friend talking to you, that you're actually there to to take photos of people? Did they know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I only did the photos individually inside the studio. So before, mm-hmm. if they were interested, I told them what kind of project I was working on, and I had them sign a release before they came in, telling them mm-hmm. that afterwards, if they didn't feel comfortable with it, they could rip up the release mm-hmm. and I wouldn't use the pictures. Mm-hmm. So people knew they were coming in to sit with me, but I didn't ask them any direct questions before they were inside with me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want anyone to have any time to kind of change or preconceive their answer.
That's a good way of doing it. Like you're making people feel so comfortable and you make them trust you. And so, you know, that was a smart way of finding your characters. And so did you notice any stark difference or similarity between how Canadians and Americans collaborated with you in this project?
Not really. No, I felt like every city that I went to was a bit of a microcosm within itself, showing mm-hmm. a very different array of people. And that was similar within cities. So I don't mm-hmm. know if that makes sense, but one city, mm-hmm. There would be someone that found it painful. One person would say acceptance, nobody gave me the same answer ever, mm-hmm. But some people would pull from the same words. There was lots of the same words used in different contexts. Mm-hmm. I did find in the south, but obviously it was some of the spots I picked were directly related to churches. So mm-hmm. God came up a bit more down south.
Yeah.
But then once asked to go past, everyone was with, oh, and they were like, okay, well, what is love of God? What is that? So
interesting.
Generally, it's a microcosm. It wasn't, there wasn't like, oh, and Canadians were like this and Americans were
okay,
like this.
Okay, yeah. and so your characters have provided some very unexpected answers to what love means to them. The first character told an interesting anecdote, how he kissed someone's hand because he thought it was his girlfriend's and he was so in love, so he just followed the vibe. I loved it. Like, it was nothing I could have anticipated to hear. And so the second character said that love is something tangible. To her, love is encompassed by her son. And so if you were to compare what people think of love on St. Valentine's Day and how these ordinary different strangers describe this feeling, what would you say is the challenge to the modern Western thoughts on love?
I would say that modern Western thoughts on love is pretty related to how much our culture tends to remove people from themselves and their community, really. So thinking past we have so much commercial everything thrown at us that it's hard to remember. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of time to check in with yourself and know yourself. So often without even thinking about it, people will get stuck in kind of like just a habitual response. Oh, I was told mm-hmm. this when I was younger, and now this is what I see, and this is just what it is. Mm-hmm. And I found that everyone that came in and sat with me seemed to be quite relieved and thankful to have been able to have a space to open up, or even just within themselves. A lot of people actually said, hey, that's a hard question. I've never thought about that. And that to me says a lot about Western culture, that it's nothing about it's people individually, but it's also a community where here's a chance for us to start opening that conversation again, just within ourselves, but also within our own communities and around us, and being interested in those answers rather than just going with the first thing we've been told.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think that this universalized definition of love by the dictionary, I read on your website that you sort of did it in response to this definition that we read in the dictionary, and that's kind of like stuck in our mind of what love is. And so do you think that this definition is actually a common misconception of love, or is it just something that cannot be definitively defined, and so that's why the dictionary is not doing a great job?
I think a bit of both. I think the dictionary definition, it's a feeling of strong or constant affection for another person.
Mm-hmm.
And that, when I first went out, I was hoping to find a singular answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you said was very intuitive, is recognizing that it is pretty indescribable. That was what I learned from this project, is that everyone's answer kind of tapped into this undercurrent of love that's bigger than I think any of us can even conceive of how to mm-hmm. describe it. So every single answer was completely accurate, including the dictionary, but it's such a tiny piece of a very big thing that the tiny piece encompasses, and vice versa. So it's mm-hmm. it's bigger and smaller than I think words can even describe.
Yes, and that's what makes it an interesting topic to observe and to make a project of it. And that's what, you know, makes people interested in seeing it, because it's not something that you think of every day. And so it's great that you did this project. Like, you brought so many thoughts out there, and like you showed so many very interesting people. So it was amazing. And when you asked a young girl to define the word love, she suddenly started crying. What did you as an artist feel in that moment?
A few people started crying, and the one in specific you're talking about, as an artist, I felt relief that I had been able to offer a space that someone was comfortable enough to share as they were in that moment with me. And I just gratitude for her for being so open, and gratitude for her sharing. And when I was taking the pictures, when I was clicking the shutter, I actually felt, oh no, am I doing something wrong? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to upset this woman. So I would click the shutter, and then some of the times I would actually stop and be like, are you sure it's okay? I'm taking pictures right now. And the ones that I've shared with were like, yep, yeah, this is, you know, and then we just carry on. So sometimes I did get really self-conscious about feeling like maybe I was stepping too far. But then every time I did, I realized that's why I'm doing this project, is so we can share openly with each other. And it just taught me my own things of why barriers that I'm breaking as well. So
on your website, it says that What is Love is actually part of your larger project, the Wabi Sabi Butterfly, which is aimed at unifying survivors of trauma and sexual abuse to form a safe, collaborative, and engaging in arts communities for positive change. How does What is Love contribute to this mission?
For me, it's kind of the instigation of it. I've had a lot of trauma in my life, and I've had to rethink and relearn what love is, because it seemed very different for me than people around me, or what I considered normal the rest of the world. So when I started sort of healing from that and reaching out to my community, I saw a bit of a difference between the community I grew that had also experienced similar things, and then the community I had around me that hadn't, that I knew loved me and I knew wanted to support me. And I was trying to find a way to link that kind of understanding of, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, we all need to be sharing. And if I hadn't gone through what I had gone through, I would never, who knows where I would be now? Like, who knows if I would be instigated to make this project? But it was initially made with the hope that perhaps someone else like me, and I feel like I did touch a couple of people like that within this project, would potentially have a new space to reach out. Potentially somebody that might not have had a voice to speak before now does. So at my root of roots, that, you know, if you hope for something when you make a project, that was kind of my behind the scenes personal, you know, hope for it.
Why is the name of this larger project the Wabi Sabi Butterfly?
Wabi Sabi, if you're not familiar with the term for anybody, it's a, sort of a Japanese reference to an artistic state of accepting the imperfections. So if you make a good example I have for it is, if you make like a ceramic pot and you have 10 of them and they're perfect, you put them in the kiln and one of them cracks, that one then becomes the most valuable, because it's interacted with the world and it's been changed by it, and now it's super unique. And then the butterfly is if a butterfly goes into a cocoon and actually digests itself before emerging as a beautiful new species. And I find that butterflies, they have the matching wings. And for me, people, as we go through life, we do get changed. And sometimes it's seen as, oh no, I'm wounded, or oh no, I'm troubled. And it's like, no, we just have different parts to us. It's no longer that, like, you're supposed to be like this perfect little, you know, human figure. So it's about accepting the imperfections within us and changing and accepting the change as it comes and goes.
And you're launching your project on midnight 13th, so today, like February 13th, midnight, and it's going to be online, that's correct?
Yeah, but there's something slightly different about, I know it's such a big project, it's kind of confusing. So the video itself is not going to be online just yet. It's that short will still be there, but it's still showing in different galleries, and I'm sort of keeping the video just for those circumstances. But I find that this project has so many different ways to incorporate viewing it, that I also made a book where just quadriptych pictures. So one picture taken when people first came in, just as is, one with their eyes closed, one while they were considering their answer, and then one directly after they answered. Mm-hmm. And I also transcribed all of the audio for it. So in the book, I showed the pictures without the audio so that you would just have a response to their image. And then almost question yourself about what you're feeling or seeing based on just purely image, animal instinct, like micro expressions. And then for online, what I'm releasing, and there's only 70 people in the video, and in the book, there's only around 70, I think. So online, I'm showing every single person that sat with me's quadriptic image with their transcribed audio response underneath typed out. So the video is still separate. This is where you can just look through absolutely everyone's response, both with the picture and the words written underneath. So,
and so,
go for it.
And would some parts of this project be in like a non-digital domain? Like, would you bring it into a gallery? Yes.
I've already shown, so I've shown it in gallery settings. It was at Burrard Arts Foundation last spring. And the two and a half hour video, like that short that's online, the 2.5 hour video is shown in kind of a setting where you are encapsulated in a space much like the one that I drove out in. So you're intimate with the viewing. Mm-hmm. And it's like in a separated space. And then I showed road shots as well to walk you into it. So you'd get a sense of being on the road yourself and sitting with these people. And that's showing again in New Orleans in the spring with the New Orleans Loving Festival, one of the festivals that I shot with when I was down there. So that will be the video element and the road shots as well.
And this year in Vancouver, like in a gallery, would you be showing something from your project?
Not. I've already shown it to the extent that I will in Vancouver. There's so many people that I want to touch with this that I have to kind of make sure that my energy is placed to getting it in the other cities now. It's shown in Montreal already, and it's shown in Athens, Georgia already. And I'm pretty sure after I'm done showing it in the galleries to my standards of what I think it, you know, as far as I can take it, I will put the whole video online. But for now, I like it being kept something that you have to go to and place yourself outside of your own comfort zone and just sit with it. And I think that the quadriptics online are the reason I'm not presenting that in the gallery is because I want every single person that was a part of it to be able to look and view and share their answers and see how it interacts with everyone else. And that wouldn't be possible in a gallery setting.
Angela have put a lot of soul into her project, and that's what makes it so beautiful, and that's the word I would use. I have a feeling I'm like, okay, I'm Donald Trump. I always say beautiful. Because whenever Donald Trump speaks, and I have a feeling he has a problem with his vocabulary, and he wants to say something, he wants to sound friendly, he says beautiful. And, well, okay, I started this first before Donald Trump. Beautiful is my word. So whenever I like something, I say it's beautiful.
Yes, and, please and don't say those ugly words.
That I'm Donald Trump. No, I'm not Donald Trump.
Yes, those ugly words.
I can't be him, because I'm not him. I'm Anna.
Please.
So, what was I saying? Yeah, so Angela put a lot of soul into her project. I appreciate a lot of her work, and I looked at it online. And so, what did you guys think about the interview, about what you heard?
I think that it was great the way she talked about the Japanese term. What was it?
Wabi-sabi.
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 Well, that idea of accepting every mistake you make, not as a complete failure, but just as a learning point and moving forward. I guess like the idea of when you fall, you don't have to like stay down, just get up again and keep going. It's a learning curve. So I think she had a really beautiful philosophy, and portraying that through her photography is very empowering and powerful. So I really recommend that you check her work. And again, her name is Angela Fama.
Yeah, I thought it was great, especially close to the end of the interview when she revealed part of her story, when she said she's been through trauma, and that was, I felt like it was also a way of her just healing herself. And when she talked about the butterfly analogy, and how butterflies in their cocoons digest themselves and they become this beautiful thing, and how she thinks we could all do that. I thought that tied in perfectly with her project, and I thought that was beautiful.
Totally. And yeah, also...
Beautiful again.
No, it is beautiful.
It is.
Yeah, and also the idea that, you know, the idea of love, how you keep reshaping it, so it doesn't have one definition, so you keep with one relationship, it can mean something to you, with another relationship, it keeps evolving. It's not this fixed idea of what it is, it's just, it keeps evolving.
I don't know if many other artists worldwide thought of asking strangers, random people, how would they define the word love. I have a feeling like that should be a popular idea in art, so I assume maybe a lot of other artists have followed the same path. But what is special about Angela's project is the way she did it. She's taking photos of how people, and it's amazing. Like, she takes, they think, and as they think, you see, you kind of feel what they think. You kind of see their characters. You kind of see their memories just through their facial expressions as she's photographing them. And then there's an audio accompanying the photo, so it's just like photos, like you hear the shutters, and then you hear their conversation, and it's so intimate, and it really draws you in a lot, because it grabs your attention. This way of doing it, it's unusual.
And also, it's a project that took her around North America.
Yeah,
right?
So from Canada to USA, and
on an RV.
RV?
RV, like the big, the
van?
Mm-hmm.
The van's name is Debbie.
Oh, great.
And that name suits her car a lot. I think it's so cute. It's Debbie.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for listening. Now we are going to listen to one song before going into a discussion about Valentine's Day and what we think about it.
Most days, my partner and I pass through the world unnoticed.
Hi, you're listening to CITR.
My name is Paula, and this is Pride.
Except the time we crossed the border into the U.S. My partner wasn't a citizen of either country, so we had to park our car and request special permission to enter. At that time, his passport didn't indicate that he was male. So, as he had done many times before, he calmly explained why. The guard showed no expression. She simply nodded and left the counter with his passport, disappearing into a small office. While she was in there, five different guards slowly walked out of that office, each one trying but failing to appear nonchalant, and looked at my partner. Or I should say, looked over my partner. I was fuming. I wanted to call them out on it, but if I did, I would have ruined our chances of spending the weekend in Portland. Eventually, we were given permission to enter. Without a word, we walked back to our car and continued on our journey. I can't believe what just happened, I raged. My partner grinned and shrugged his shoulders. At the time, I was writing an article about how being queer was not just about being in a state of oppression. Some of us experience a certain pleasure in being a freak, and I called that experience freaking. Why aren't you mad? I demanded. It's just like freaking, he said. While I was raging at the customs counter, my partner was quietly enjoying messing with the border guards' heads.
Hi, you're listening to CITR. My name is Paula, and this is Pride Facts. I have some info on same-sex marriage around the world. There are 200 countries in the world, and as of 2016, only 23 have legally recognized same-sex marriage. The first country to introduce equal marriage was the Netherlands in 2000. 10 years later was Argentina, followed by Uruguay and Brazil in 2013, and Colombia in 2016. In Europe, same-sex marriage legislation varies from country to country. Denmark was the first country in the world to give legal recognition to same-sex couples in the form of domestic partnerships in 1989. Ireland, formerly known as one of the most conservative and religious countries in Europe, voted for the legalization of same-sex marriage through a public referendum in 2015. Same-sex marriage remains illegal in most Eastern European countries, and they don't recognize same-sex civil unions. Canada passed the Civil Marriage Act recognizing equal marriage nationwide in 2005. The trend towards equal marriage legislation since the year 2000 is cause for much optimism. However, same-sex marriage is still illegal in most of the world, so the fight for marriage equality continues. Happy Pride, everyone!
Hello, Babe Waves! This is CITR 101.9 FM, and today we are discussing about Valentine's Day, love, what it means to us, what Valentine's Day means to us. And today in the studio we have Anna, joined as well by Azul and Dora. So we had a little question to start with. How do you celebrate Valentine's Day?
Well, I don't really... growing up, it was a thing, but I guess, I don't know. The relationships I had when I was younger, the guys I dated at the beginning were way too hippie, and they kind of hated the whole capitalist scene, so they were kind of against it. I think it was just that they didn't want to buy me anything, pretty much, and that they went with the anti-capitalist argument. But hey, I'm with them, yeah.
Did you do anything this Valentine's Day?
Not really. I didn't. But my roommate, she is a hopeless romantic. And her girlfriend is also a hopeless romantic. She ran into my boyfriend and she asked him, "What do you get Azul for Valentine's Day?" And he was like, "Was I supposed to get her anything?" So she guilt-tripped him. And when I got home, I had a little bonsai tree in my room that said Happy Valentine's, and I thought it was fantastic.
That's so worth it.
Yeah.
That's like the best use of guilting I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys do anything special for the day?
That was actually a very cute story. That was like when you ask a simple question and you get such an interesting story out of it.
Radio.
Radio.
No, I didn't do anything because I can't do anything. Like, to me, it's like even my birthday will be an ordinary day. It's like every day is a day when I do whatever I keep doing. But it felt really good to see all those people. Valentine's, like, love. I mean, love is a good thing. And it's not like you have to go buy something or go be all, I don't know, fake about it, kisses hearts and stuff. But it's just, it's day when people, I mean, it's just a day of love. I'm not expecting people to love each other, to love me whatsoever, give gifts of love, but just to think that today is the day of love is kind of, it's
yeah,
kind of good. Feels good.
Yeah, I don't like celebrating Valentine's Day because of all the associations with it, like consumerism. I really don't like that. And also because simply I think you have to love each other every day. Yeah. Like, it's not a day, a special day, but I understand that it's a special day, okay? And I didn't do anything special because, well, it was special in itself the day because my girlfriend was arriving with her family from Austria. So I went to pick her up and her family, and now they are all here. So we are visiting Vancouver. And so it was a very special day. So I had her. Oh, I did hide notes around the room and little presents. So
so cute.
To me, a Valentine's Day kind of ties into 8th March. I don't know if 8th March is...
What
March,
is it?
March 8th is celebrated in Northern America. It's the International Day of Women.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is celebrated in Northern
yes,
America.
Yes, of course.
To me, that kind of those 2 days, one in February, one in March, and not too far apart from one another, kind of makes a big bunch of, you know, like makes a set of just some kind of happy period, because it's love, and then it's women, and I'm a woman. so it's not just... Because, like, it's like femininity versus masculinity, and, like, femininity is always portrayed, like, somewhat more vulnerable, more precious, and somewhat, in a sense, a bit weaker than masculinity, and so, sort of giving attention to it and being very noticing it and making it feel special kind of spreads good feelings. Well, at least to me personally, I feel good that we have a day of love and a day of women. Those are just nice things to think about, and I have a feeling those are the good traditions that are so far being practiced. I don't know how you guys think.
No, totally. I just think that's like a beautiful plug. CITR, International Women's Day, March 8th, we're having a full day of all women-oriented programming. Mm-hmm. Listeners. I have never really framed those two together. That's like a very fun thing that I'll have to mull about. Mm-hmm. I never really celebrated Valentine's Day. This is probably the first year that I did. I like dressed up and I drew like a heart on my face and makeup. Aww.
so cute.
Thank you. I think that like, I think as like most holidays, there's like no point in being negative about it. Like, I feel like Valentine's Day, like a lot of the negative connotation is like the consumer, like the weird consumerism and like Hallmark holiday of it. But then also that like, you're supposed to feel bad if you don't have a Valentine's, and like there's a lot of pressure on it, like this is a day like where my love is like supposed to be like showcased. But I think it's like such an arbitrary day. It is nice that it's like, yes, like celebrate your love now, but I also don't like that like people feel like they can't like end relationships if they're unhappy in them, or like pressure to like define the relationship through your actions on this one weird day, I think is like,
and
a
pressure
really
to have somebody for that day.
Yeah, no, it's like, it makes no sense. Yeah. But this year is probably the first year that I was like, you know what, like I love my sister.
Embrace
I love
it.
Yeah, like I love my friends. I'm just gonna like celebrate like the love and like positive relationships that I have in my life. And that was like sick. But then also I went to the every Valentine's Day in Vancouver, there's the annual memorial march for murdered and missing Indigenous women. And I think it like, I always spend a year being like, why Valentine's Day? Like, why is this a day that like, I feel like it's not a random day. Like, it's a holiday. It's a known holiday like around the world. And the Indigenous community has decided to remember the women who are missing on this day, which I think is,
maybe it's the idea to spread the love.
Yeah, I think
remember.
Yeah, totally. Which is like amazing. I was talking to my friend at the march. There are a lot of people with flowers, kind of like in solidarity with the women. And I think it's, like, so funny that, like, Valentine's Day is really the only day of the year that you can just, like, be holding a single rose, and it's super normal.
Yeah.
And, like, that it's, like, kind of used to celebrate and remember these women was, like, sick.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really mad that I couldn't go to the march, but how was it? How was the ambience? Tell us.
Oh, it was awesome. I went for the first time last year, and I, like, have, like, I guess I'm going every year now, which was, it was sick. There were, like, so many people. It was so big. There were so many people there marching. The annoying thing, well, not annoying, like, I feel bad saying annoying, but right when the march kind of, like, recircled back to Maine and Hastings, where, and then after the march, there's, like, a prayer circle, and everyone sits and kind of speaks on the issues that they're trying to, like, bring attention to. At Hastings and Carroll, there was a fire, so ambulances kept having to go through and, like, separate the march, and, like, there were all these elders sitting in the middle of this intersection, and they had to get up and move.
Oh,
and
no.
And like, it made sense the first couple times, but five or six times it happened, and it was like, guys, use a different intersection. Like, this is not the only way you get through. It was really, really disruptive. But then it subsided, and it was beautiful and amazing and lovely.
Well, I'm glad. I'm really glad. I had another question about this, and this, what is the definition of the word love for you? So I'll start if you want. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote this question. I think it's stupid because obviously every word has its definition in the dictionary, but this one is so, I feel like it's a wave. You can give it, it comes, it goes, it has any and every definition you want to give. Also, love, it doesn't have to be romantic. I'm in love with every dog I see, with every puppy. I cannot, my girlfriend is so annoyed at this point at me because I will touch every dog that goes in front of me. And the happiness that they all give me, it's love. So that's my definition of love, is puppies.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think, I mean, with all due respect, I think it's a stupid question too, because...
Totally. But that's why I wanted to discuss it.
Yeah, yeah, completely. Because, I mean, love comes back to connection, I think. And it's such a vital part of being a human. And just, like, I don't know, you could argue that I'm a living thing, but no, let's keep it to humans. And... since you're a baby, you know, you love those who take care of you and those who are around you. So your kinship, your sisters, your parents, whatever. And I remember the first time I fell in love was with my group of friends. When I, in high school, I finally found this group of five amazing human beings. And I literally told them, I love you. I never with romantic love, I felt so much. And then you have love for objects, which I am kind of critical about, but I love my bike. Her name is Emiliana, and I love her. Like, I talk to her, I sing to her. She's the love of my life.
And oh my God, I so agree with you. I built my own bike, and it's back in Europe, and I miss her every day. She also has a name.
What's her name?
And it's Geneva. Because I built her in Geneva, Switzerland.
You built that bike.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. It's black and orange, which
is
my
so
favorite.
How do you build a bike?
Yeah.
Years.
Yeah.
How do you build a bike?
With your two hands. Yeah.
You're so cool.
Tutorials. Like, come on, Alien.
You talk so calmly about it. I built a bike. But it's a big deal. Oh,
no, it's love.
I think it's, like, pretty hard to... I don't think it's a stupid question, because I think that, like, a person's... You're welcome, Hayley.
Thanks.
It's because I love you. I think that every person's answer will say a lot about them as a person. I guess, like, it doesn't matter somewhat, like what so much what someone thinks love means, but more, like the content of their answer is, like, how that... reflect stuff about them, like the subtext of that. I remember in grade 11, I was in a theory of knowledge course for IB, and the teacher was like, so what's love? And people were like, I don't know. And I remember this one kid, he thought he was so freaking smart. He was like, love is a biological connection between a man and a woman to reproduce. And he was like, okay. Like, the teacher was like, really? Aww. Like, that's what you think love is? And yeah. he was like, yup. Like, he was obviously very, like, smug. He thought it was a very smart-alecky answer, which it was, but it was also a dumb answer. Like, I think it's impossible to differentiate love and relationships. I've been talking a lot about, like, primary, secondary, tertiary relationships in my life and, like, kind of fitting primary partners and, like, friends and, like, all that stuff. And my friend described it. She was like, I would say that, like, my primary partners are people who I would do anything for, like, who I would have no qualms, like, picking up the phone at 3 a.m., they're like, I'm in a ditch, and you're like, cool, I'm on my way, like, mm-hmm. I'm here to help. And I think that, like, love is, like, so, or, like, what we kind of, like, how I experience love is, like, very much, like, how much I'm invested in and how much I'm willing to, like, sacrifice for a person and, like, how I, like, categorize those people within those, like, tiers almost.
Totally.
Wow, that's a nice way of defining it.
Gracias.
I'd say to me love is respect, because when I say to my friends that I love them, which I can really say it, and doesn't matter if they're girls or guys, I think I say it because, first of all, it's just for me to say that, I have to really respect the person for something. And this respect makes me value that person a lot and makes me also have, like, be ready to sacrifice if needed. And so I convert all that into love. I believe that love is actually respect. Well, it's everything. It's a lot. It's everything. There's no boundary to defining love. But output. Just how I feel about, just how I try to analyze. So when I say love, what motivates me to say love? I love you. And I think what motivates is respect for the person to whom I address my love.
I have a question. How would you guys, like, differentiate intimacy, love, and, like, where does, like, sex kind of fit into all of that?
Great question, Dora.
Thank you.
Well, I was going to ask a similar thing, and it was when you said no boundaries, I was going to kind of bring in the topic of polyamorous relationships and how the whole notion of intimacy, romantic love, and sex come into play into this plural, like, multi, yeah, I don't know, type of love. And I tried it once, and I tried to, because I identify as bisexual, so I was like, why not try it with three people at the same time? You know, I thought that love was this, like, two-dimension type of thing, and then when I came here, I got introduced to the polyamorous relationship deal, and I was like, I'm sure I can do this. I mean, it makes total sense. And it felt awkward. It felt ungenuine. I have nothing against it. I just couldn't handle it. It just felt like I was crossing too many lines. I couldn't keep a single narrative or a genuine narrative with the three of them. It was two girls and one guy and me. And, yeah, it was just messy. I couldn't, yeah.
Do you think that was just too much? Like, do you think you could handle two partners a little easily?
I thought, well, maybe it was the amount, maybe. But I think more than that, it was that the previous relationships I've had, it's you kind of dedicate so much of your energy and your thought to one person that it kind of builds up, and then you get to meet them and, like, meet them more intimately, and, like, sex gets better, the relationship gets better. But when there's more than one, I feel like it's so easy to compare and then to wanna kind of compete. I feel like I was making them compete in a way, and I wasn't telling them anything, but in my mind I was like, I wanna spend time with him, but I, like, really wanna sleep with her. And then I was like, wait, do I love him or love her more? And it was just more than one was complicated, at least for me.
Yeah, I've been thinking about polyamory a lot too. I identify as asexual, so like I kind of like a relationship for me like is like sex kind of like really isn't a part of it, and I think that like that is a huge part of like a lot of people's primary partnerships. So I feel like very comfortable using polyamorous kind of like language to describe the interactions that I have and relationships that I have with people. Because there's real, like, for me, a primary partner is really just someone who I am, like, kind of more dedicated to than the other partnerships in my life. But then that line gets, like, blurry in my brain because I'm like, oh, like, I'm an acquaintance. Like, that makes them, or not even acquaintance, but, like, I'm, like, a friend but not a close friend. So they're, like, a tertiary partnership. But then, like, that's more just, like, a friendship. Like, how is that different or whatever? So I don't know. My understanding of, like, polyamory, I think, like, is limited in that, like, I haven't really practiced it, maybe, like, in its purest form. But I, like, love it. I think it, like, it's not for everyone, but I love the idea that, like, you can be committed and, like, have investments in, like, more than one person without feeling almost like trapped in it. Like I have the unpopular opinion that cheating is like not bad. I think as long as you tell the person you're in a partnership with, like,
but then that's not cheating.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That is like more of like a polyamorous kind of like understanding.
Agreement.
Yeah, exactly. Which like I like fully support. Like I think it's like very weird that people are like, no, this is the one person in my life. Like you're gonna be attracted and like find a lot of other people interesting, and like doesn't, but like also that doesn't like diminish the love that you have for your primary partner. You're just like, I don't like the idea that like your love kind of ends in one human being.
Totally. It's a lot of responsibility on that person, I think.
Yeah, and like in like on like Valentine's Day, like that means like the pressure to like buy someone chocolates and like do a grand gesture is like so much heavier and like so much more weighted than like it really needs to be.
Yeah, it's just the idea that we've taken from our grandparents and parents that you find one person, you marry them, and that's it. And now we are starting, okay, yes, people are starting doing this way earlier, but I don't know. I think that the idea is coming to get us that we don't need one person in our lives. Mm-hmm. But I still think that it's fluid. Everything is fluid. If you are completely fine in a polyamorous relationship, by all means, just live and let live. If I'm completely fine with my girlfriend and I'm saying, you know what? I'm going to be with her and I don't know if I'm going to be with anyone else. Totally fine as well. I think the problem starts when we start telling each other, no, you shouldn't do that, or you should feel that way or not. That's the only issue, right? And that's where love becomes messy and complicated and cheating and all of that, because we just don't keep the same tabs or what it means to me and what, no, it means to you. Mm. But as long as everyone is happy and they do what they feel is right for them, please go ahead.
And that's, sorry to like bring it back to cheating, but like that's why I think cheating is actually pretty valuable, because it's like I know so many people I know multiple people who've been in a relationship that they were unhappy in and then cheated or like were cheated on, and then it was kind of like, oh, neither of us are really happy, like we need to like talk about this relationship or we need to end this relationship. And the only people I know who've cheated have gone to their partners right after. But, like, it's just kind of, like, it's you or your partner being, like, I need something that, like, isn't happening in, like, this, like, relationship, and I'm looking for it somewhere else. And that's not a, like, that's not something, saying something bad about the partner you're with. It's just, like, saying that you need, and it's, like, it is, I know it's so hurtful, and, like, it can be, like, so, like, there's so much betrayal kind of, like, in that, but I, like, you need to, like, I think that you need to be, like, look at it as a positive. Like, you're expressing, like, issues that you're having in an unhealthy way, but, like, let's, like, work through it.
I think what you mentioned, that sometimes in a relationship something is not happening, that made me think that actually in those cases that something that's not happening is actually love. Because if you're in love and you love, it's kind of, if you love, I have never in life came across any person who cheated when he was actually in love. because like if you love one person, but then you know what I mean? It's kind of, so I have a feeling if relationships don't work out, that's, you need to look, and it, I think it's simple. You just need to look at this love. So what's going on with the love? Do we actually love each other? Are we, is our relationship growing, or is it, that's it, just the feeling of love? Like it was there, but now no longer. It just, it happens that. And so I think that's when people start going somewhere looking for someone, because they need love. We all need love. It's something that, especially when you're young, well, I mean, and like we stay young for long. We stay young for till, I'd say, well, my outlook on this, we stay young till 80, and only from 80 do we start thinking, I don't need love. I don't need all this adrenaline and all this. I just, let's peace. It's just peace. So, but then till then, that's at like 80, like that's the entire life. We're all about love and finding love, loving and being loved. And so I think if something's not working out, that's exactly that thing.
I would actually disagree with that. Yeah, I would think there's something nice about exploring with other people. And it, I mean, I'm getting a little bit too personal, but I recently wrote a letter to my ex-boyfriend. I hope my current boyfriend is not listening. And I told him I fell in love with someone else. And this just reminds me of how much I loved you, and I will always. I mean, I broke up with my ex-boyfriend and it was a hard breakup, but like just the idea of my new relationship really reminds me of the old one. And with my relationship right now,
so you love both? You
love, well, both. I will never stop loving him, my ex-boyfriend, who was my first love, and like, yeah, he's just such a big part of me.
That's totally valid. I agree with you. I see. I know this. Like, I think we all kind of somewhere at some point we felt that I love, and then I love, and then I love everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but so, with that in mind, my current boyfriend asked me if it was fine if he could, you know, if it was in a party or whatever, and he wanted to kiss another girl he was into, if I was okay with that. And at the beginning, my first reaction was like, I don't know, like maybe not. But then I thought, wait, that's beautiful that he, I know that he loves me so much that he feels comfortable telling me I like this girl and I like her as I love you still. And just the fact that he has the confidence to tell me that, I love
as
it.
As long as he loves me and only likes her, we're, well, good.
Yeah. See, then I was like, what if you fall for one of them? But then I thought, it's fine. Love can be multi, like, I mean, if dimensional. He can handle it.
Yeah. And also, maybe this is just like the ace person in me, like not really understanding, but I think that there's like a difference between like sexual attraction and like loving, like investment and commitment, like, yeah, like being at a party and being like, that girl is really attractive, I want to make out with her right now, is very different than being like, I've been spending a lot of time with you and I really like enjoy, absolutely, your like gravitas, like I
gravitas. I'm gonna look that word up.
Yeah, and that's why I'm okay with cheating. I'm like, I mean, you just wanted to sleep with her. She's, yeah, hot. I can sleep with her too. Like, might as well.
Do we have any other questions?
You can go for it because we are running out of time.
I have no.
Oh, you have no questions?
Should we listen to music?
We can't listen to music, Anna, because it's actually 6 o'clock already.
Oh, so yeah. Sorry, listeners.
Sorry, we ran out of time. And yeah, we have to go. It's El Sonido coming up next.
El Sonido.
So make sure you listen to that. And we'll see you next week on Babe Waves. Actually, not next week. It's reading week at UBC. So we'll see you the week after that. Take care.